good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But, well, we ask you to hold your calls. We have with us Dr. Joel Drend, and we're going to be talking about the abortion breast cancer relationship. Now, Dr. Brind has actually been studying this for many years, and of course, there are many, many scientific studies that show a definite relationship between abortion and breast cancer, first trimester abortion, and the more abortions you have without ever carrying a child to full term, why the higher the incidence of cancer. But there was an organized effort on the part of the American Cancer Institute and the National Institute of Cancer to play down this relationship, because after all, there is a pro-choice agenda, and it really doesn't matter to them, at least to certain people, of whether or not we're harming women or not. In fact, the greatest harm to women is an abortion, because so many of them will have lifelong psychological problems because they know that they've killed an innocent child, and they killed their own child. But, there was a recent meeting that Joel Drend attended where, of course, they were going to have get to the bottom of this once and for all. Dr. Drend, why don't you tell us about that meeting? Were you asked to attend?
Yes, I was one of the invited experts at the National Cancer Institute's workshop on early reproductive offense and breast cancer risk, and it was not what it was cracked up to be. It was represented as a comprehensive review and thorough investigation of the evidence, which it was not. It was a political sham, basically designed to once and for all kill the any public awareness of the abortion breast cancer link. It was stacked. Imagine, if you will, a scientific debate because someone has raised in the public mind a question, and there is a research that's in a controversial issue, and so they're going to debate it and have it thoroughly vetted out. Do they then have only one side presented? Do they have those who have documented the other side silenced, only there to talk about other things or not to talk at all and just to sign on to this for fear of losing their grants if they don't? I mean, this is the kind of shenanigans that went on. I mean, I was invited, but I was a minority of one, pretty much. I don't depend on the federal government for my grant money. And so I can speak my mind. And it was not easy getting my own invitation. The Bush administration, which now, of course, is in the position of overseeing the activities of all of HHS operations, Health and Human Services, including the National Cancer Institute, did ask the director of the National Cancer Institute to set up this meeting because questions had been raised about the fact that they were denying an abortion breast cancer link. But they don't really rule the rank-and-file scientists. Point of disagreement I would have with you is that it is not ruled by a pro-choice mentality. I don't have trouble working with people who are pro-choice. These people are virulent pro-abortion extremists.
All right, fine.
These are the kind of people who defend abortion clinics, who work for abortion clinics to block state legislation requiring reasonable informed consent and parental consent guidelines. So they're not pro-choice,
right? All right, you hang on here. We're going to be back in just a moment right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Dr. Joel Drend, and he's really the leading world's leading expert on the relationship between first trimester abortion and breast carcinoma. And Dr. Brand, I know that you've been studying this for a long period of time, and would you like to sort of give us a review? I know that you did a meta-analysis of all the studies done in the world, at least all those that you felt were scientifically accurate. What was the overall decision that you came to after analyzing all these scientific studies?
Well, in 1996, we reviewed every study that had been published, actually, in the world and on abortion and breast cancer. That was 23 at the time, and 17 out of the 23 showed increased risk. When you put them all together, there was a significant increased risk, averaging about 30% overall for women who chose abortion in terms of their increased risk of getting breast cancer later on.
All right, fine. Well, could you just speak up just a little bit louder?
Sure.
Sure. That'll help us here. And the thing is that, of course, you published this, and then immediately, of course, somebody came up with a study over in Denmark or something to try to counter this. In fact, they seem to go to great lengths to try to play down this risk that a woman, at least there's certainly a very good probability or possibility that, you know, that if a person has a first trimester abortion and has never born a child or taken a child to term, that their incidence of breast carcinoma increases. And yet, everything is done to play that down, isn't it?
Well, not just play it down, but outright deny it and outright say that the best evidence says it isn't true. And that evidence that you cited, the study from Denmark, is still being touted as the best evidence. And in fact, it's pure junk science. I mean, that was supposed to be a big study because it was 1.5 million women. It was every woman born in the state of Denmark between 1935 and 1978, over 300,000 abortions. Over 10,000 cases of breast cancer. My, it was supposed to be so definitive. But they violated some of the most fundamental rules of scientific research. That shouldn't have gotten into the New England Journal of Medicine or any journal of medicine. I mean, they used, for example, breast cancer records going back to 1968, and they didn't even measure abortions. They didn't even start counting abortions until 1973. So all those women in Denmark who had breast cancer in 1968 and 69 and 70 and 71 and 72, gee, isn't it amazing? None of them had abortions because they weren't on record. Well, you might say, well, they only legalized abortion in 1973 as the paper claimed in Denmark, but guess what? Abortion was legalized in Denmark way back in 1939. And there were 60,000 women in that study who were classified as not having had an abortion, who in fact had had abortions on record. Which of those women?
We'll be right back in just a moment. We're going to have to bring on one more station. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. Joel Brand. We're talking about the relationship between first trimester abortion and breast carcinoma, and he was mentioning that there was this extensive study that was done over in Denmark, and the purpose of that was to discredit Dr. Brin's work, his meta-analysis of the relationship between breast carcinoma and the first trimester abortion. He had reviewed the world's literature, and no sooner did he do that than they came up with another study out of Denmark. It was amazing how quickly they got that out. And so what was wrong with that study? You said that basically they simply ignored a lot of the women.
Well, they didn't
with
just ignore. I mean, even ignoring would be bad enough, but they actually misrepresented. They misrepresented, for example, when abortion had been legalized in Denmark. They implied that abortion in Denmark was just like our Roe v. Wade, legalized in 1973. So that's when their abortion record started. Of course, they included women who had been born since 1935 and neglected to tell you that abortion had actually been legalized in Denmark in 1939. So there were 60,000 women in that study. In fact, 60,000 of the oldest women in that study, the ones most likely to get breast cancer, who were classified or misclassified as not having had an abortion when they actually did have abortions on record. Meanwhile, they stacked the study with over 350,000 women in that study were under the age of 25 at the end of the study. There's no breast cancer there, but they had 40,000 abortions. I mean, you can't compare basically two populations of women. The young ones have had the abortions and the old ones have breast cancer and claim that you have a meaningful result. But they did. This is really just junk science. It had no business being in the New England Journal of Medicine or any reputable journal.
But of course, this is what we find today so often, is that they are misusing science to come up with their preconceived notion. And really, unless you can sit down and analyze many of these studies, why, of course, if you accept them, the conclusion they come to, you know, you're going to be getting a faulty conclusion.
Yeah, it's outcome-based science, I call it.
Outcome-based science. Well, but of course, the thing is that women are dying because of this.
That's
this is
right.
What's so disturbing.
That's right. And they're even covering up the well-known fact that the most outrageous thing, really, is that it's well-known and they even acknowledge that a woman's breast cancer risk is lowered by having a full-term pregnancy, and the younger she is, the more protection, the better. And when she has an abortion, that protection is removed. So when you have a woman, especially a young woman, especially a teenager, especially if she hasn't had any children yet, and she is already pregnant, the only reasonable kind of sound medical and ethically sound advice that could be given to her is that if she chooses the abortion option, she's going to end up with a higher risk of breast cancer, maybe much higher risk of breast cancer than if she chooses childbirth. But instead, they couch it in this term of, yes, pregnancy is protective, but they don't want to say anything about abortion, except abortion is not linked to breast cancer. And that's just a lie. And it's of course, a death-dealing lie. There are hundreds of thousands of teenagers every year who have abortions, and they're never told that their risk of breast cancer is going to be increased.
Well, now, isn't it true that the more the first trimester abortions you have without ever taking a child to term, you know, the higher the incidence of breast carcinoma?
Well, this is what we call a dose effect in the field, of course, right? The more you have the dose of the thing that causes you trouble, the more trouble you're going to have. And in fact, the idea of first trimester abortion is really because most of abortions are first trimester, and that's where the numbers are. That's where the statistical strength is. But in fact, what is shown is that the longer the pregnancy goes on, the higher the risk is. So in fact, second trimester abortion is even worse. And that makes sense because it's really the hormones to which a woman is being exposed day after day after day, those enormous amounts of estrogens making her breasts grow during a pregnancy, which multiply the number of cells she has in her breasts that are ultimately vulnerable to becoming cancerous. So this is consistent with what we know about these hormones of pregnancy and what we know about most other risk factors of breast cancer, but when it comes to abortion, it's politically incorrect.
I remember one time when I was in the House of Delegates of the California Medical Association, I put forward a resolution that a doctor should tell the women of the possibility there was a relationship, not even a probability, but just the possibility of a relationship between first trimester abortion and breast carcinoma. And my goodness, I was attacked and vilified and demonized for even daring to suggest that. And of course, when they do that, why, they get most people to back down.
Yes, and of course, the fact that the listener should know that medical ethics, I mean, these are things that were established at Nuremberg, for God's sake. These are, you know, medical ethics say that if there are credible studies published in medical journals, even if you think, being a skeptical scientist, that it has not been conclusively proven, if there are reputable journals in medical, reputable studies in medical journals that actually show that there is a significantly elevated risk, a doctor is duty-bound to tell his or her patient about that risk before they undergo a procedure which is elective. After all, it is a matter of choice legally. Everybody knows that. But when it comes to abortion, we seem to be in a parallel universe, or maybe an anti-parallel universe.
Well, now, of course, at this meeting, I understand that you attended. This was a meeting. How many people were actually at that meeting?
Well, there were just under 100 people at the meeting, and probably about 20 were actually epidemiology and intimately familiar with the literature regarding induced abortion and breast cancer. Many of them have published on it, in fact.
Well, now,
a number of them published studies showing the link.
And I understand that there was one, a large study out of USC I remember reading many years ago when I was studying this, and basically I understand that the man who put that out suddenly reversed himself, saying my study wasn't any good or something of the sort.
Yes, he recanted. Yes, those data are no good, he said. That's Malcolm Pike of USC. But you have to understand also that what people will admit to off the record is something like, for example, well, you know, these people at the National Cancer Institute have to sign off on my grants.
In other words, they're going to prostitute what they're saying, and they're going to really don't care about the women who may die because they want to get the grants, and they're more concerned about the grants than they are
honest. Right, their livelihood depends upon it. I mean, here you have someone who's been for years at a research institution. I mean, I had a research appointment at Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York, and in 1994, when work of my research came out on abortion and breast cancer in The Lancet, a prominent British medical journal, I was summarily dismissed. When we talk about politically incorrect, this is not just a nice turn of phrase. This is something that is very rigorously and it's very much enforced in the professional world.
In other words, if you're not politically correct, if you don't go along with the pro-choice agenda, this issue of why, of course, they're going to get you, it's really a matter of getting people to silence them, isn't it? Or at least intimidating them into silence?
But you see, these people aren't pro-choice. Yeah, my meta-analysis, for example, was done with authors who were not all pro-life, in fact. That was people who had differing views on the legal status of abortion. We're really not talking about pro-choice people. We're talking about people who claim they are pro-choice. In fact, they coined the term in order to deceive people to think that they were. These are people who very clearly are interested only in one choice, and that is abortion. These are people who, some of the people, for example, who were there at the NCI meeting, well-known epidemiologists, Lynn Rosenberg of Boston University, Julie Palmer from Boston University, and others who have actually worked for abortion clinics as expert witnesses for the purpose of shooting down state laws in Florida, in Alaska, and other places for the purpose, state laws that were enacted for the purpose of protecting women, informed consent laws, parental notification and parental consent laws for the purpose of protecting children. And most people who identify themselves as pro-choice are for these kinds of very reasonable restrictions, that minors should not have abortions without their parents' knowledge or consent. But these people who populate the institutions that get the money from the National Cancer Institute and who are in the National Cancer Institute and carry weight around there, these people are pro-abortion extremists. They are outside the mainstream, even when you consider pro-choice America, quote-unquote.
But now,
people need to know that.
But of course, we supposedly have a Republican administration there that is pro-life. Why are they financing all these people on the wrong side?
Well, you put an administration in there who is pro-life, and they, and so they put somebody at the top, and they tell these pro-abortion technocrats, now let's reevaluate this, let's study it, you know, and so they put together a conference. But really, the rank-and-file scientists, the people who are there really running the show within the agency continue to put forth their agenda. And so you have a new administration comes in and it has statutory authority, but when it comes to real authority, the other side is very, very well entrenched. I mean, people have written about this extensively, how political office holders come and go with the election cycle. But the people who are really in charge are the career government service employees, you know, the civil service scientists, the rank-and-file scientists, senior epidemiologists, and so on. These are people who are very well entrenched, and they run the show no matter who's in charge at the top. And I must say, and to the Bush administration's credit, the only reason there was a meeting, the only reason that the statements of denial that the National Cancer Institute had put up there were taken down for many months was because of the Bush administration's attempt to force these people to be truthful about what was going on. But it is amazing how strongly entrenched the career technocrats really are.
But in the final analysis, this meeting was the worst possible thing they could have done because, of course, didn't they come up with sort of a consensus process? We're all going to vote on this, having nothing to do with science, but whether you want to get your grants. And wasn't it overwhelming to reverse the Bush position?
Yes, but it's also important to note that the National Cancer Institute is a political institution, and so they actually define what is politically correct. So it is politically correct that there is no connection between abortion and breast cancer. But just like saying that the world is flat, you can pass a law, you can have a resolution or a consensus decision that the earth is flat, but the earth will neither flatten herself by 1 millimeter nor apologize for remaining round, and abortion still increases the risk of breast cancer and kills many women every year.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I have to remind you that we have several items that we think that you hopefully will want to try. One of them would be the Be Alive Royal Jelly product, and of course, you can get these simply by calling 866-233-7500. That's 866-233-7500, and when you do, they'll tell you all about royal jelly. This is what the queen bee eats. Why? That's why she's big and strong, and the rest of the poor old bees really aren't in very good health. They live 6 weeks. She lives 6 years. If you'd like to know more about royal jelly and how it will help you, why, give them a call at 866-233-7500. And really, people who take this say they have more energy. They don't get run down at the end of the day. So call them at 866-233-7500 and ask about Be Alive Royal Jelly products. And then, of course, the Alamax is a product. Alamax is a allicin compound, and allicin is the active ingredient in garlic. And garlic has been shown to lower blood pressure, to lower cholesterol, to lower basically to thin your blood. And, of course, allicin, at least shown in studies over in Great Britain, to significantly decrease the incidence of colds and upper respiratory infections. So certainly it's playing with the immunity system. I know I took it all last winter, and I did very, very well as far as colds were concerned. If you'd like to know about Alamax, call them at 866-405-4000. That's 866-405-4000. And then let me tell you about the Big Berkey water filters, because the Big Berkey water filter is a stainless steel water filter. It has ceramic filters. It's the standard in water filters. It's been used, this type has been used for over 150 years. This is what the missionaries in many places of the world will use. And you put the water in the top, it comes out the bottom. And, of course, they've filtered out the bacteria, and they filtered out many of the chemicals that are there. Now, the Big Berkey is made of stainless steel. The filters are ceramic, and, of course, they will last for a good long time because you can clean them over and over again. The Big Berkey ordinarily sells for $279. We sell it for $239. And if you buy it through us, well, you get either a video or a four-tape set that we have produced. Now, the Big Berkeys are sold in every state but California and Iowa. We do have here, though, the one that is available in California. It's called a Berkey Light, and it's a clear plexiglass. It's the sort of a plastic that they make bulletproof glass out of, so that you can actually see the water levels there. And then, of course, it has a black Berkey. They call it a water purifier because it takes out literally all the bacteria. You can't find any bacteria at all after the water's gone through there. And, of course, it does a great job of taking out the chemicals. Now, these filters will last 2, 3, or 4 years. They won't last as long as the ceramic filters will. But, of course, if you have water that has a bad taste to it, you want to get a purified water. Why don't you consider going to my website at radioliberty.com, that's radioliberty.com, and you can actually see the various types of water filters that they have, or if you want to replace the water filters you already have. If you'd like to get the Berkey Light, it's $199 plus shipping, and then, of course, you get the video or the four-tape set. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, the Big Berkey, the Berkey Light. And then if you have to, of course, go to my website and look and see exactly what they look like. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and my guest is Dr. Joel Brin. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to ask a question, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY here in the or in the coast of California, 464-8295. So that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Dr. Brin, somebody had wanted to know, what about spontaneous abortion? What effect does that have as far as increasing the risk of breast cancer?
Well, spontaneous abortions generally do not. Most of them, the overwhelming majority of them, occur in the first trimester. And the reason that they actually happen is because there's not enough progesterone to maintain the pregnancy, whether it be due to a fetal abnormality or maternal abnormality. That's ultimately why the pregnancy aborts. And what really raises the risk of breast cancer is estrogen. And estrogen is made from progesterone. And studies have shown very consistently that progesterone and estrogen are very low in spontaneously aborting pregnancies. And so, just as the epidemiology has shown consistently over the decades, that spontaneous abortions generally do not increase the risk of breast cancer. Of course, abortions that may happen spontaneously in the second or third trimester due to some sort of trauma might be more properly medically classified as inadvertently induced abortions, and then they would be presumably associated with increased risk. But most spontaneous abortions don't increase the risk, and we know why. They don't increase the hormones that increase the risk.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, what's going to happen? Supposedly, as a result of this meeting, now they're going to be able to justify taking down from their websites and from their clinics so that they're not going to have to talk about this, or is this still going to be a real issue?
Well, the National Cancer Institute has never really acknowledged the link. Neither have abortion clinics generally acknowledged the link. The only acknowledgments have come in the form of states that have required abortionists to inform women of these risks, and there are still many states that are considering such legislation to join states such as Louisiana, Kansas, Mississippi.
Can you speak up just a little?
There are states that are considering now legislation to increase awareness and to require actually that abortion practitioners inform women of the risks. This is already required in Louisiana, for example, and also Mississippi and Montana and Kansas. In fact, one of the last things that Governor George W. Bush did before he became president of the United States as governor of Texas was see to it that a law went through requiring parental consent for abortion for minors. And part of that law was the requirement that the state printed booklet on risks of abortion, which included breast cancer, be given to those girls who wanted to try and get an abortion without their parents' consent. So there are states that require it. I'm going to be testifying in Massachusetts in a couple of weeks because they have a state legislation that is proposed. The same is true for some other states. Texas is putting through an informed consent bill, and so there is continued activity state by state to require that abortion practitioners really start to honor the rights of women. These kinds of so-called restrictions on abortion, informed consent, parental notification, parental consent, they are restrictions on the abortion providers. They're not restrictions on the abortion patients. They expand the rights of patients to know the risks that they face with abortion. So you see, the other side's managed to kind of frame the issue in a very perverse way, as if somehow we're trying to restrict the rights of women. No, we would like to restrict the rights of the abortion providers who prey on women.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's really an important issue, and I really think that the only way we're going to be able to do anything is to, for the average individual to understand what's going on and to put pressure on their legislators to demand that they pass laws so that at least women have to be told, because the abortionist doesn't want to do anything to discourage somebody from having an abortion. He's not going to get his money. He's not going to be able to do what he loves to do, and that is carry out abortion. So, you know, one of the things, though, I think that women need to know, and certainly girls need to know, that, you know, when they do terminate their pregnancy, that they may actually be risking their own lives, in years to come. Do you think that really has an impact on young women, of course, facing the choice of abortion?
Well, I hope so, and we certainly have our own website, www.bcpinstitute.org. That's the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute, where they can get lots of information.
Well, we'll get that out again.
Other things, too, yeah.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break here, as we go into another break. But then, of course, when we get back, we're going to invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. This is Dr. Stan here, and of course, this is the time I want to mention a couple of the things that we carry. One of them, of course, are the Miracle 2 soap products, and certainly I never thought I'd be selling soap, but we actually feel that this is something that a lot of people really have enjoyed, and we can't make any medical claims for the soap product, but we can tell you that many of our listeners do, and they could tell me some amazing stories, which I'm not going to repeat here on the radio, but I will tell you that, that they tell us it has really helped them in many, many ways. So all I can do is tell you that there's a soap and a moisturizing soap, a very alkaline solution, which is what they call the neutralizer. And then there is, of course, a lotion and a gel, and you can get all of them together at a specially reduced price. And we do a tremendous amount of business as far as people coming back to use it over and over again. We've used this for a long time ourselves. We really like it. I know my wife says it really helps as far as bites are concerned. If you'd like to know all the things it can be used for as far as washing your animals or washing your counters or just how to use the various products, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'll send you certainly a brochure and the description as put out by the manufacturer. And then, of course, if you'd like to get the special, where you get a special reduced price getting all five of them, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then I want to mention Phenopoly. And, of course, if you have children or you have grandchildren in government schools, you really have to understand that they're not going to teach them to read properly because there's an organized effort to dumb our children down. There is no way they could do as poor a job as they're doing unintentionally. And, of course, every year they say, oh, we need more money, smaller class size. Listen, you can have 100 kids in the class, and if they're taught properly, they can excel. And our children are not excelling because they're being dumbed down, and many of them are not being taught to read properly. Phenopoly is a means of teaching your children or your grandchildren how to read phonetically, how to spell phonetically, how to pronounce words phonetically. It's a wonderful program designed by the woman who devised the phonics game. And, of course, there are only 40 sounds to the English language. There are 12 rules, and in about 16 hours, if you'll play this game along with your child, you can reorient their brain, and they'll begin to read and read normally. And this has been done with children, many of them, you know, in the lowest percentile of their classes, and they've actually come out in the highest percentile once they learn how to read properly. Most of these programs, $300, $400, $500, $600. Phenopoly is $139.95. It's five board games, two bonus games, and, of course, we throw in a couple of books along with us to explain to you what happened to our educational system. So give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for Phenopoly. Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest is Dr. Joel Brin, and before we went to the break, he was going to tell us about his website. Dr. Brin, what's your website where people can actually learn more about this subject?
They can learn about breast cancer prevention in many ways, not just about abortion and breast cancer, and that is at our website, which is bcpinstitute.org. That's BCP for Breast Cancer Prevention Institute.org. And there is actually another website which is dedicated to the abortion breast cancer information. That's abortion breast cancer, whole one word, abortionbreastcancer.com. That's run by the Coalition of Abortion Breast Cancer, a women's group in Chicago.
All right, and of course, there's really a conscious effort to try to get this information out across America, so that people will really understand what this is all about. And fortunately, you're not alone, but you certainly are the leading spokesman. Our guest is Dr. Joel Brand, who's on the front line of this battle. Well, how did you get involved? How did you start your study of the link between first trimester abortion or abortion and breast carcinoma?
Well, actually, my research career goes back over 30 years into looking at links between reproductive hormones and human diseases, everything from acne and baldness and prostate cancer in men to breast cancer in women. And I had actually been researching breast cancer, among other things, since 1982. And 10 years later, I came across an article which talked about the protective effect of pregnancy. And it seemed to me that I remembered it had to be a full-term pregnancy. And when I went back to the literature, I realized that that was true, and also that there were a lot of papers that were out there that showed a significant link between abortion and breast cancer, but it was being covered up. And so I realized that if it didn't take someone like me, who was persistent and loud about it, because abortion, anything that challenges the myth of safe abortion is politically incorrect. If I didn't do it, nobody was going to do it. So that's been my main research and public education effort for the last 10 years now.
Well, of course, that was a really very courageous thing you did, because, of course, when you did take a stand on it, why, they got you fired there where you were working.
Well, fortunately, the positions that I was fired for were unpaid positions.
All right.
My day job, so to speak, my tenured faculty position at the City University of New York was not threatened. The lab space and the prestige that I had and the actual appointments as associate professors in the Department of OBGYN and Reproductive Sciences at Mount Sinai Institution in New York, that went out the window. And the truth has to be more important than that.
Yeah, well, it certainly does. In fact, that's really what it's all about. And you know, each one of us has to do what we think is right. And I certainly admire you for your integrity and you know, your willingness to come under attack just to try to bring the truth out, because there's so many young women that are coming down with breast cancer. And isn't breast cancer really on the rise all across the country?
Yes, and in fact, the National Institute did a publication about a year ago, talking about how of all the major cancers which seem to have leveled off, cancer was still on the rise in women. And when you look a little more closely, it's still on the rise in women. It's because of just breast cancer. When you look a little more closely, it's just because of breast cancer in women who are under the age of 65. In other words, women who were young enough to have had an abortion since it was legalized with Roe v. Wade. So even the government statistics bear it out, as much as they deny it. It is, yes, cancer is still on the rise, and it's breast cancer, and it's breast cancer in women young enough to have had abortions. So even though abortion doesn't account for a large percentage of breast cancers, maybe only 5%, but you know, you have over 200,000 cases a year, so that's still over 10,000 cases a year of breast cancer that are attributable to abortion.
Now, what are the other incidences attributable to? Is smoking play a part in it, or what are some of the
other...
Well,
it might. There's conflicting information about cigarettes, because it really depends how the body handles the carcinogens in cigarette smoke. And exactly how that happens is determined by genetics, and some women's bodies handle it one way and some women another. So that's kind of a very murky issue. Cigarette smoking also hastens menopause, and early menopause lowers the risk of breast cancer, so there are a lot of things that get complicated in there. Most breast cancer can actually be attributed to childbearing patterns that abortion is part of, contraception is part of. It's a matter of the fact that American women have a very long interval from the time they hit puberty to the time they start having children, and they don't have many children, and they generally don't breastfeed their children, and even if they do, they don't do it for long. And when you add up those childbearing patterns, you actually can explain most of the difference between the incidence of breast cancer, which afflicts only 2% of women in places like China and Japan and in the so-called third world, and over 10% of women in the Western industrialized world.
So one woman in 10 will get a breast cancer.
Well, actually, it's higher than that, about one woman in 8 at this point.
All right, fine. Have you ever run into a relationship between lesbianism and breast cancer? I've read some articles in the homosexual magazine that talked about this was a very, very real factor, and other articles that had said, you know, it was as much as 1 in 3. Have you ever heard that?
I haven't heard that it was as high as 1 in 3. Certainly, if we're talking about lesbians who don't have children, and that's not necessarily all of them, but there's certainly a much higher rate of women among lesbians who don't have children. And therefore, we can explain a lot of, we would expect to have a higher rate of breast cancer. As far as it being higher than that, it's very hard to say. I don't know of any published data that actually links lesbianism per se, other than the fact of not having children.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now, of course, what happens to then any woman who doesn't have children increases her chance of breast carcinoma?
That's true.
All right, so then, of course, what actually happened at this meeting? Did they take a vote at the end of it? This is a, we started out talking about the meeting that you'd attended.
Yes,
yeah,
the meeting at the National Cancer Institute was set up something like some meetings I'd been at the UN. So there were a few talks given early on, and then those were sort of publicly accessible. And then and the talks, of course, were given only by those people who did not believe there was a link between abortion.
In other words, they didn't ask anybody on the other side.
Oh, no.
So they really stacked this thing. Well.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Then why would the people that were appointed and asked to by the Bush administration, you know, stack it like? You would think that certainly you can talk all you want to about the bureaucracy, but, I mean, this was put on by the Bush administration, and their man, whoever put this on, stacked the meeting.
No, I wouldn't say that, actually, because, well, to get more specific and name names, Dr. Andrew von Eschenbach is the Bush appointee, who is the administrator of the director of the National Cancer Institute. Now, I'm not going to claim that he's totally a good guy anyway. He was, after all, the president-elect of the American Cancer Society, which has actually been in denial on the abortion breast cancer link going way back. So the Bush administration's director of the National Cancer Institute is obviously a get-along kind of guy who doesn't want to get involved in what the people under him do. Now, he's the lowest rung, actually, of Bush appointee. Everywhere under him, including the chairperson of the meeting itself, Dr. Louise Brinton, is a career civil service government scientist, epidemiologist, thoroughly pro-abortion. And so they were actually allowed to run the show. So it was not anyone in the Bush administration who actually organized the conference. What they did was they required that a review be organized. And so the director directed that the scientists organize a conference. And what they organized was a sham. It was a fraud.
Okay, well, let's go to, we've got Ruth calling from Pennsylvania. Ruth, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I wanted to speak to the hormone issue that you raised. It's my understanding that a lot of breast cancer starts with middle-aged women as they reach menopause. And what happens is, as you stated, there's a situation where estrogen dominates. And you said that that happens when you terminate a pregnancy, that the estrogen is dominant and it doesn't run its full course of the hormones throughout the pregnancy. Well, it's my understanding also that if you supplement with bioidentical hormones, not synthetic hormones, but plant-derived bioidentical progesterone and such, that you can offset some of this estrogen dominance, and that might help women in these situations.
Well, let's get Dr. Brin's thoughts on that.
Well, are you talking about, when you say these situations, are you talking about a woman who terminates a pregnancy and then wants to follow
well,
up with...
Well, I'm comparing the two because you're talking about estrogen dominance.
There are certainly not any substantial trials where women who have terminated pregnancies are then given hormones to try and change the situation.
Now, is it the progesterone or is it the estrogen that produces the problem?
It's my understanding that...
Well, let's get Dr. Brin to ask
him. Okay. Yeah, it basically is estrogen is the culprit, although there needs to be some progesterone or something like progesterone around for it to stimulate the growth.
Okay. Did you have anything else you wanted to say there, Ruth?
Yes, because there is a lot of information out there, and there's a lot of doctors who still subscribe to hormone replacement therapy, not the synthetic stuff, but the bioidentical stuff that you get at compounding pharmacies. And from what I've read with them, it is the progesterone that is cancer protective. So this might be a solution that people might want to look into, not just for terminated pregnancies, but also middle-aged women.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
I think the jury is still out and the hormone issue is not resolved yet. And all those studies that poo-pooed the hormones were related to the synthetic hormones.
That's true. Well, partially synthetic. Just so that the listeners know what you're speaking about, there was also a very large recent placebo-controlled trial on postmenopausal estrogen replacement, and it was about what they call the PremPro regimen, which is what most women who take postmenopausal estrogen replacement take. And the Prem part, which is the estrogen part, is actually not synthetic. That's derived from horse estrogen. It's not plant-derived, it's animal-derived, but the pro is
Animal-derived from horse
synthetic.
Urine, I believe.
No, please let him finish.
The pro part is actually a synthetic progestin, and those have been shown to increase the risk of breast cancer and other cancers. Natural progesterone, or even the synthetic progesterone, is known to lower the risk of uterine cancer. As far as breast cancer is concerned, I don't know. It can always be said that if anything, it's going to be less harmful to take a natural progesterone, and I know there is a large school of thought that natural progesterone is actually beneficial. Certainly, it's not going to be as harmful as the synthetic stuff, but I'm really not aware of the large studies and research findings to be able to comment on that any further.
All right, fine. Well, I appreciate that. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number is, of course, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And, of course, our guest is Dr. Joel Brind, and we're talking about the abortion of breast carcinoma link. Now, the thing is that they've done everything they could for many, many years to poo-poo this, to discourage anybody from, believing it. And, of course, as a result, I think there are an awful lot of young girls who honestly believe that there are no consequences at all of choosing to terminate a pregnancy. And yet, of course, they're not only the psychological problems, but there is the possibility that down the line, what is it, about 20 years down the line that the carcinomas come up?
Not necessarily so late. The increased risk, the relative risk, is very high for women when they're young. They have at least double the risk before they turn the age of 40. So even though breast cancer is only afflicts perhaps 1% of women, one woman out of 100 before the age of 40, when you talk about women who've had an abortion and they haven't had a child, it's maybe 2-3% or more, depending on whether or not they have family history.
Well, no,
so we're talking about a lot of young women who are getting breast cancer.
Well, now, what about this family history of breast carcinoma? How much of a factor is that? Let's imagine that you have a couple of terminated pregnancies, and there is a strong family history of breast carcinoma. What happens to your risk then?
Well, one of the most shocking studies that was done was a study that was actually done, funded by the National Cancer Institute. And it was published in 1994 by Dr. Janet Daly and colleagues at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Institute in Seattle. And they found that there was an overall 50% increase in the risk of breast cancer for women who had chosen abortion. But most ominously, they found that for women who had an abortion before the age of 18 and who also had family history, any family history of breast cancer, even an aunt or a grandmother, who had breast cancer. For those women, they were virtually guaranteed to get breast cancer before the age of 45. They actually reported relative risk equals infinity. And yet, where was the sense of urgency to try and reproduce that finding? There was, about the same time in 1994, a similar study in France that also showed a very strong connection between women who had family history and who had an abortion. And yet, we're talking about somewhere between 30 to 50,000 teenage girls every year in the United States who have a family history of breast cancer and who get an abortion, and who tells them anything about the fact that their risk is going up, not just going up, but going up astronomically, when in fact the silver lining to their cloud of being pregnant when they're teenagers is that if they carry that pregnancy to term, their risk will actually go down so that instead of being at increased risk because of their family history, they would actually be at lower risk. But they don't tell them that. They want them to have an abortion.
What about in the schools? I mean, certainly they talk about abortions in schools. Is there any effort to get the truth to these girls in the schools? Because they're certainly not going to get it from the abortionists.
Well, we do talks in schools as much as we can. But what we're doing now, in fact, we're putting the finishing touches on it. We've got a video that's going to run about between 20 and 25 minutes, a video which not only has some of the facts coming from myself, a basic scientist, but also Angela Lanfranchi, who is a prominent breast surgeon in New Jersey, who sees these people in her office every day. But also there is some very strong testimony from women who have been victimized by abortion and who have been cut down by breast cancer in their prime, young and beautiful women, talking on the video about how they were misled into having abortions, and now they have breast cancer. And this this resource should be available within a month, and I just invite people to stay tuned to our website at bcpinstitute.org, and as soon as that video is available, we will certainly post it on the website so that people will know how they can get a copy.
All right, and will you be then trying to get that out to the centers across the country where they're counseling women?
Yes, absolutely. High school and college students, we're trying to circulate it as far and wide as possible. We think this will really hit home to young women because they'll know that not only will they increase risk of breast cancer, which they don't want to think about, but it's not like this is just a grandma's disease. They'll know that breast cancer can cut them down in their prime while they're still young and beautiful if they make the wrong choice.
All right, and again, the website is bcp.org. That's BCP.
BCPinstitute.org.
Institute. BCP right. Institute. Thank you.
Right. Spell out it.
Thanks so much for being with us. Bye-bye. Thank God bless you.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just tell you about a couple of the other items that we have, which we think are important. One of them, of course, we carry the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, and the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum is on 22 CDs. And, of course, if you have a child or grandchild going to a government school, you need to get them out. You can rationalize all you want to, but the purpose of education is not to educate is to indoctrinate. The children know far more about sex than about Shakespeare. They know far more about global warming than they do about geography, and it didn't happen by accident. So here is a program in these 22 CDs. You can take a child from grammar school all the way through high school, and of course everything is there, the textbooks, the tests, the lesson plans. All you really have to do is buy separately one of the Saxon math textbooks. The program is $199.95. You get it from us, and of course we've had great results. The people who've got them have been very happy. That's a Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. So think about it very, very seriously, and hopefully you'll want to get the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum for your children or grandchildren. And then, of course, we also mentioned that if you believe, as I do, that we are entering some very difficult times, we're in World War III. You know, most people don't want to think about anything bad happening, and I hope and pray it doesn't, but are you really prepared? Well, one of the things you could do, of course, would be to get food and other supplies in that would last for a good long time, and that certainly they would be there if you needed them. And I'll tell you what, it's far better to have them and not need them than to need them and not have them. If you'd like to know what you should have and where to get it, give us a call at 1-800-5-448-9927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the Ready Reserve food catalog, and basically we'll send you one, and if you see the things on there, you send it back to us, we'll see that you get them. So that's the Ready Reserve food catalog. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Ask her about the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum and the Ready Reserve food catalog. And then, of course, if you have not yet seen my video, the Rack, the Untold Story. And it comes either by itself or with a syllabus with all sorts of very, very important material in it. You need to get that so you really understand that we have entered World War III. Oh, things are fine right now. Things were fine in Germany in 1939, but of course before that war was ended, 40 to 60 million people were dead, and we are in World War III, and certainly Mr. Woolsey, former director of the CIA, says it's World War IV. It doesn't matter what you call it. We're in a war, and we're in a war with the Muslim world, and of course we've lost most of our allies. Give us a call right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're dependent on those of you out in the listening audience who believe in what we're trying to do to help us. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do. 5 hours every day as we reach out across America trying to get people to know the truth. Now, if you have not yet read Regicide, which is the story of the murder of President Kennedy, it tells you who did it because it's based on the papers of Mr. Robert Crowley, who was deputy director of clandestine operations for the CIA. And, of course, he turned these papers over to Mr. Gregory Douglas when he died, and it's right there. We killed him. We killed him, and here's how we killed him. Here's why we killed him. And the reasons are quite different than any you've heard before. And, of course, how it was done, and, well, it's a fascinating, fascinating story. It's called Regicide. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You can get it by itself. As far as the JFK assassination special, you'll have to ask specifically, though, to substitute that book for one of the others. We have The Dead Witnesses, the story of what happened to almost 100 people. Almost 100 people, actually, it was 109 people, who knew something about the Kennedy assassination. And, of course, they all died under very mysterious circumstances. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this happens in America. And, of course, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. That book is The Dead Witnesses. You get it by itself, or you get it as part of the Kennedy special. And the book, based upon Mr. Crowley's papers, is Regicide. And, of course, we really hope that you'll want to get this information to give you some insight into what really goes on behind the scenes. And if they would kill an American president, they could get away with it, and they were covered by the media, what does that tell you about how honest the media is? And, of course, why, of course, if this is true, why doesn't Barbara Walters or Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw tell you about it? Well, there's much out there that you're never going to hear about, and that's why we do what we do 5 hours a day. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen the video, or what you really need to do is get the Brotherhood of Darkness special for $29.95. You'll get the book, the video, and an audio tape. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will certainly want to go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, and you can learn about the Big Berkey water filters there. Certainly you can get information on many of the other products that we carry that help to finance what we do. You can certainly pull down our newsletters. They're all up there. You can listen to our programs 5 hours every day on the Internet. And, of course, many of the programs are archived. These are the Radio Liberty programs, and you can listen to those. Please tell others about our radio program. Ask them questions. Try to get them to think. Because, of course, they've been playing games with our minds for a long period of time. They knew how to neutralize the American people using the church. And, of course, they infiltrated our seminaries 50 years ago to convince the average minister that people should not be involved in politics. It's all in God's hands. And if it's all in God's hands, well, maybe that's their God. He's doing an awful poor job, but I don't believe that the God that I worship really is responsible for abortion and partial birth abortion and, of course, all the terrible, terrible things that have happened throughout the world. I believe we're involved in a spiritual battle, and I believe that the forces of darkness have done everything they could to neutralize the Christians, who should be the champions of trying to preserve the liberty of this nation. So if you'd like, of course, to know more, go to our website and then pray for America. Pray for our leaders, pray for our ministers, pray for our boys overseas. Pray for revival, because if we don't turn back to God, God's going to turn his back on this country. And lastly, please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.